criticism in recent months for comments suggesting that American agents should assassinate Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez and that Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's stroke was divine retribution for Israeli pullout from the Gaza Strip. The Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, called Robertson's new comments, quote, grossly irresponsible. A Texas appeals court today granted Congressman Tom DeLay's request to stop a prosecutor from filing subpoenas in the former majority leader's pending money laundering case. The Third Court of Appeals panel in Austin, Texas, also said several subpoenas issued by Travis County DA Ronnie Earle are null and void because DeLay's trial is on hold. In addition, any outstanding subpoenas issued before the trial was put on hold or suspended during the court stay. DeLay awaiting trial on money laundering charges related to accusations that he funneled corporate money largely banned from campaigns in Texas through the Republican National Committee and a Texas political committee into the campaign coffers of several Republican legislative candidates. DeLay denies any wrongdoing. No trial date's been set. Saying that voters deserve a choice, repeating opposition to the Iraq War, businessman Ned Lamont formally announced that he will challenge Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman for the Democratic nomination for Lieberman's seat. Lamont will be Lieberman's first opponent from within the Democratic Party during his three terms in the Senate. Lamont is hoping to get support from Connecticut Democrats dissatisfied with Lieberman's pro-war stance and his perceived closeness with the Bush administration. Lamont said at a rally, quote, nobody will be calling me George Bush's favorite Democrat. This is Air America Radio News.
Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show on the Air America Radio Network. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike. Mike and Kathy, little Molly, off for the night. They're wending their way to Madison, Wisconsin, flying up to Milwaukee, driving to Madison, and Mike is going to be at the Hawks Bar and Grill tomorrow. He's going to be joined by WMIC's 92.1 host Lee Rayburn, and they're going to be doing a Tuesday lunchtime meetup in Madison. And let's see, it's going to be from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. Central Time. It's going to be at Hawks Bar and Grill. And it's to meet the listeners and hopefully raise some money for the Deb Mayer Legal Defense. So you can stop by like on your lunch hour and say hello to our pals, Mike and Kathy. I wonder if little Molly's going. I don't know. Are they going to drag little Molly? I shouldn't say drag. Are they going to take little Molly on this big jaunt? What else would they be doing with her? They must be. Anyways. Mike will be in Madison this next evening as well, so he will not be broadcasting tomorrow night either, but Laura Flanders is going to be sitting in, one of my faves. Laura does a show on Air America on Saturday and Sunday nights, and so she's going to be sitting in tomorrow night. But here's what's happening. The University of Wisconsin at Whitewater College Democrats have invited Mike to speak tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the UC Commons. The event is free, open to the public, and you can go to collegedems at uww.edu for more information. Now, you may think, why am I announcing this on a national show? I mean, there's people in New York, people in Florida, New Mexico, right? It is northern Mexico, isn't it? It's occupied Mexico, those states, New Mexico and Arizona, California, what have you. Where was I on this? Anyways, we have stations, 70, 80, 90, I don't know, all over the country. But one of the reasons that I announce local things is a couple reasons. First, to give everyone an idea, there are, quote, are things happening, people are fighting back, there is a resistance to the dominant madness, even though it doesn't coalesce itself in the manner that we may like currently, we're starting small, we're starting local. It's very, very important, very, very important. Hey, by the way, this is a phone-in talk show, and we have a number for you, 866-303-2270. I'll keep giving it throughout the night if you're a newbie here or haven't called before. And also, the other thing is to give you a model of what you can do in your area. Say there's an Air America station. Well, invite Mike Malloy. I don't know if he's going to come out to occupied Mexico. He may. Hey, invite me. If they'll pay my way or you pay my way, I'll come out. What the hell? I love road trips. And so does Mike. So do the rest of us. That's why we're on the road so much. There's nothing as nice. Well, let me tell you, I should have finished the sentence, but I love doing this. I've been doing this for a long, long time. And somehow, though, it's hard for me to really visualize that there's anyone out there. I mean, I hear your voices, and that gives me some confidence. There's at least a handful of you. But when we get together with a meet and greet like Mike is going to do tomorrow in Madison, man, it all comes alive. And if you've heard live shows on Air America when our hosts are out, well, you get the electricity. I mean, it's don't hate me, fellow atheists, but it's church. You know, it's the whole congregation come in one spot. I mean, we always say we want to preach to the congregation. Sometimes it's okay. Got to get the church together on the weekdays, the weeknights, and talk some sense, right? Something that's not coming out of the official halls of power, to be sure. A one man who is single-handedly ripping the shreds out of power is Mark Crispin Miller, and he's going to be my guest in, 34 minutes after the hour. He's got a new book out called Fooled Again. I meant to bring the old Who song, Won't Get Fooled Again. Justin, if we have that hanging around, I don't know if you can just plop that in. I know you're not a classic rock station like the one I'm broadcasting from, but a great song. Actually, it's great what we call bumper music, bringing you in or out of commercials. Anyways, the book is Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election. We're not talking 2000 here, folks. How the Right Stole the 2004 Election, while they'll steal the next one, too, unless we stop them. I mean, that's quite a title for a book. It's published by Basic Books, and we will talk with Mark Crispin Miller at 34 minutes after this hour. Wonderful guest. I always enjoy interviewing him. Now, coming up is the third anniversary of this horrid war that Bush Co. started. Based on lies, the worst aspect of it is, well, I'm sorry, it's not the worst aspect. The worst aspect is this mountain of corpses that Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney and Powell and the rest of them are responsible for. But why it went so terribly bad is that the liars lied to themselves. And they're so arrogant. They're so used to doing whatever they want with no consequences whatsoever. They thought we would buy all their BS about weapons of mass destruction, connection to Al-Qaeda, all that crap. Everything that we know, most of us, 90% of the Air America audience knew was baloney. Maybe, you know, the majority of American people didn't, because they keep getting fooled again, over and over and over again, generation after generation. Politicians lie about war. It doesn't matter whether it's the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, filled with lies, filled with massive lies. And they're not all the same. In, you know, World War II, we actually fought people worse than us, you know. Most of us have learned from history, and you know that oft-repeated line by, is it Santana or Santiana? Must be Santiana, right? If you don't, I don't know the exact phrase, but it's, in other words, if you don't learn from history, you repeat it. And that's what happens in this country. People, the Spanish-American War, well, I'm forgetting them all, the Mexican War, is that people get, I don't know what it is. It's probably in the mass character structure of people living in nation-state society. So that the dominant institution isn't localized, convivial, communal, face-to-face relationships, but this abstraction called the state that is able to mobilize these other abstractions. The concept of the state, its ideology, its symbols like the flag and all that. And they can really whip people up, can't they? And they do it time and time again. I don't know how they do it. I mean, I saw this madness. Remember that old, wasn't it Neil Young, Military Madness? Remember that song? Man, I ought to just whip out all these old classic tunes. I wouldn't even have to talk. I'd just play it. That song, say it all. Anyways, this Military Madness comes along, and we say, like in December of 2002 and or even November, we said, wait a minute, there's no threat from Iraq. Bush is doing this before the 2002 elections because his poll numbers are trash. I mean, all of a sudden they discovered these weapons of mass destruction. We all know it's nonsense. Millions of us around the world knew it. That's why we took part in these enormous demonstrations. Here is the citizenry, you know, frothing. It's like something out of 1984. What was it, 3 Minutes Hate? The enemy is shown. I mean, I wish, you know, I don't ever watch television, but I was tending to watch it a little then because I just wanted to see the propaganda apparatus for the state, how it functioned. And it was just like, oh, man, I'm forgetting my Orwell. It was, what was it? What's, all right. Okay, here we go. Give me the emails. calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Who was Big Brother's enemy? Yeah, Bronstein. Or is that Trotsky's real name? But it was a Trotsky-like figure. Anyways, so it was like Saddam Hussein, his evil visage, you know, repeatedly on the screen, and the population beginning to froth with fear and rage, wanting to, you know, to trounce this transgressor, this man who has brought us this fear, brought us, you know, we were told by liars like Cheney and Bush and the rest of them that he was responsible for 9/11. Anyways, people get all worked up. We don't get worked up. I mean, what's the difference? I mean, you know, Wilhelm Reich, the great psychologist, talked about mass psychology. Well, part of it is a mass psychology of submission. You have these father figures of which these authoritarian personalities, unfortunately, and particularly at crisis points, the dominant personality within state society. People can't think by themselves, and they submit to these leaders who are almost always lying to them, And somehow their critical faculties just evaporate. I'm not sure why. Ours don't. Are we special? I don't know. But it's, you know, so now we've all learned, and everybody thinks that Bush is a liar, and but not when it was needed. People needed to know this before the war started. I've got some stories when I come back that are, it's just, the fact that I got them at the last moment really surprised me. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show, 866-303-2270.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
You're already doing what's hard for your health. You diet.
That's hard.
You do regular exercise.
That's harder.
You even get a colonoscopy.
The hardest.
If your doctor says you're at risk for a heart attack, he could tell you that adding Bayer low dose is a simple way to help prevent one out of three heart attacks.
Now that's simple.
Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer low dose. A little does a lot.
You know, it's amazing how many things you can do online these days. Plastic surgery online is still a few years off, but I bet they're working on it. And what about doing all your car insurance business online? Well, it's already here. At Geico.com, you can do most everything. Change drivers, change cars, change coverage, change your oil. I made that last one up. Geico.com. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
And now, back to Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Peter Werbe here in Detroit, Michigan. Man, I start what I call these raves like I did at the beginning of the hour. Never get to my point. Point was that we're at the third anniversary of this lying, illegal war crime called the war in Iraq, launched by these war criminals in Washington, Bush Co., right? So March 19th is going to mark the third anniversary of a war that never should have happened. I'm reading from a page from United for Peace and Justice. If you go to unitedforpeace.org, you'll see the hundreds of events that are going to be taking place between March 15th and March 22nd, that there's going to be an enormous outpouring of citizens within the United States to do what we should be doing as citizens. I mean, forget about the Democratic Party, that it doesn't do its job. We have to be doing our job. And to whine about despicable characters like Joe Lieberman of Connecticut just doesn't get it. These guys never could be depended on. Ever. Ever. Once in a while. I mean, actually, never. I mean, suddenly they would get it when there'd be civil rights marchers in the street, or anti-war marchers in the street, or suffragettes in the street, or labor organizers in the streets, and what have you. I mean, then they got it. Then suddenly they go, whoa, there's actually millions of people out there. On their own, never. And you can see how weak-kneed they are, because there's not enough of us yet. I mean, we got a pretty strong movement. We got a pretty strong base to our movement for peace and social justice, but it doesn't have the dimensions yet that are going to make these weak-kneed, opportunistic Democrats say or do anything real. So if you want something to happen, you can't wait and hope that some ostensibly liberal senator or congressman is going to do something. I mean, there's wonderful ones that are already do stuff all the time. Our John Conyers here in Detroit, Dennis Kucinich, Barbara Lee, millions, hello, dozens? A few, a handful, anyway, you know. So it's up to us. So one of the things I would entertain tonight is if you would like to very, very quickly give information of what's happening in your locale to mark the third anniversary of Bush Co.'s war, all right? Bush Co., that's like, you know, it's like a company, right? So we don't have a government. We have a racket that's set up purely to, and partly it's just totally insane, run by madmen. I mean, there's a whole element of psychopathology here. We always say they're greedy, they're just funneling money to the wealthy. That's part of the psychopathology, these sociopaths that have gained the power of the political state. But I was going to actually tell you about all these articles, but I can do that in a while. I want to hear from Robert in Miami. Robert, it's Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy. Thanks for calling 866-303-2270. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the first Gulf War, the 1991 Gulf War, which really began in the summer of 1990 when the U.S. ambassador to Iran, April Glaspie, who is, if you know anything about ambassadors, they're supposed to just spout whatever the state, whatever the president tells them to spout. They're not supposed to come up with things on their own.
Wait a minute, Robert. Let me just set this up a little for people. Now, Saddam Hussein, this brutal, murderous dictator, is an ally of the United States. Millions of dollars of tax dollars are going there. Donald Rumsfeld goes over, shakes his hand, gives him a pair of golden spurs. Let me finish. We give him all this intelligence that creates the situation where a million Iraqis and Iranians are dead. And so he is our boy. April Glaspie is the United States ambassador to Iraq, and they have a meeting, and Iraq's president says to April Glaspie, what, Robert? Go ahead.
She says, Saddam Hussein hints to her that he was interested in reclaiming their, whatever, 15th province, or whatever province. They said Kuwait was their province. And so what she said, rather than saying we're opposed to this or we will tell you what we think tomorrow, which is what she's supposed to do, she says, well, this is not in our security perimeter. This is not in the United States area of what we consider totally important that we would go to war against. This is something that is your own area. Okay?
Essentially, what the United States told Saddam Hussein in the late summer, in like August of 1990 or a little before, we don't care what you do in Kuwait.
Right. Now, listen to this. Listen to what I found out. This will blow you away. Now, you would think that Bush would have at least gotten, the first Bush would have at least gotten blame for having an incompetent ambassador and causing the war, which he never got blamed for that. The media completely covered, they barely mentioned this. But what I found out later was he was receiving nightly, whatever you want to call them, faxes, or I don't know how it was done in those days, it was pre-internet, but he received each night the actual transcripts of her conversations with Saddam Hussein. He was following that every night, so therefore all she had to do, all Bush George H.W. had to do, was call Saddam Hussein the next day and say, no, she transmitted to you the wrong information, this is not our policy, Kuwait is in our security perimeter, and we will defend it. And he would have said, fine, I'm not going to do anything, because he wouldn't want to go against us.
Well, this was the beginning of the strategy. I mean, there was a number of strategies. This was the final peg in overcoming the so-called Vietnam syndrome, that the United States was going to be able to extend its military power in the Middle East to command and control the oil reserves and the resources of that region. So this was another, the Gulf War won, another war based on lies. When will we ever learn? Thank you, Robert, for bringing that up. Extraordinarily important. We're going to be right back. Our guest is Mark Crispin Miller. His brand new book is Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election. And we're going to stop him from doing the next one, right? Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. We'll be back after these.
Coming to DVD March 14th, Good Night and Good Luck. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film. Good Night and Good Luck. Coming to DVD March 14th.
Who was the first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control? First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags? And who was working on future safety innovations, like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at OperationHope.org.
Making the pie higher, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Hey, it's Peter Werby sitting in for Mike Malloy. I'm broadcasting from Detroit. Welcome back to the show. Mike is in, let me see if, say if I can, see if I can, I can't even say that. If I, see if I can say this right, he's in Wisconsin. I've been upbraided by an econ atheist from the Malloy forums. Michael, he says it's Wisconsin, not Wisconsin. It's one of our state's pet peeves. Yeah, what the hell. Reg from TVLies.org reminds me correctly that the 1984 Orwell enemy of Big Brother was Emmanuel Goldstein. Lev Bronstein was actually Leon Trotsky's real name. And Jacob, one of our loyal listeners in Oulu, Finland, where he says it's a great morning there. The sun's coming up already. He says the mandatory Malloy thread is getting strong as usual on the Democratic Underground Forum. So hello to everyone there. Joining me in the Air America studios in New York is Mark Crispin Miller, someone I've interviewed any number of times before. It's always a pleasure. Mark Crispin Miller is a professor of media studies at New York University. He's a well-known public intellectual, writes for The Nation, The New York Times. He's the author, and this may be, I remember when I first, let me say hello to him first. Mark, how you doing?
Hey, Peter, how are you?
I'm doing great. I first came across you when you wrote your series of essays. You published your series of essays, Boxed In, about TV, right?
Oh, that's going back a ways, isn't it?
How far?
In 1988.
Oh, man, I'm not that old.
We've all passed a lot of water since then, as Sam Goldman is said to have said.
You know, actually, we were talking about Big Brother. I often, when talking about television, talk about, from your essay, Big Brother is you watching.
Oh, yes.
That's lovely. So in 1984, Big Brother was watching us. Now we just watch Big Brother, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the way it's turned out.
Yeah. But the new book from Basic is Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. And that's doesn't sound good. I mean, they've stole two in a row, and how are they going to steal the next one?
Well, by doing what they did before, only more so. I mean, even as we sit here chatting, they're working like dogs to fix the vote in 2006 and then in 2008. Right now, for example, in state after state, including New York, where I sit, and California, and other places nationwide, there are very, very spirited moves to force electronic touchscreen voting machines onto the population, despite a lot of very energetic grassroots resistance. The stuff that's going on is staggering and is going to lead to the same kind of grotesque miscarriage of electoral justice that we saw in 2004, primarily because the press won't talk about it at all. I mean, the trend I just described to you, I can't really think of anything more important to the survival of our democracy than the viability of our elections. This all-important subject is basically missing from the pages of our national press and from our newscasts and so on.
Well,
almost no exceptions.
Why do you think? Well, there is one exception. The Miami Herald had an actually interesting story in it. Is it yesterday? You were down in Miami and speaking at the New Birth Baptist Church, and suddenly that it was on the agenda down there, and that was the scene of the crime in 2000.
That's right. Well, I did Bishop Curry's radio show on WMBM. Which, you know, he's the pastor at that church. This was a couple of months ago, and they invited me down for their 11th anniversary celebration of the radio station. And I was privileged to be on a panel with Joseph Lowery, who was an old associate of Dr. King's, of course. And listen, those people get it. And as far as I can see, having toured the country now and having done tons of talk radio, the people generally get it. It's not a partisan issue. It's a civic issue. I mean, you'd have to be living in deep denial in order not to see that our election system is in serious disrepair. You have to be in deep denial, which is to say you have to be either a national Democrat or a member of the mainstream or a liberal press. In fact, the progressive press has been just as poor in dealing with this issue as the corporate press. We got a very curious situation here. Where,
well, I was going to say, why would the left press, the progressive press, not be all over this?
I don't know. You tell me. I have my own ideas as to why it may be the case. I think when you get right down to it, a lot of people within the establishment, and I think that includes a good many left liberal publications, a lot of the people who work in the establishment, if not all of them, sense quite clearly that they're skating on thin ice. I mean, we're all skating on thin ice sort of economically. People's position is now kind of precarious. I don't think this is a conscious thing, Peter, but I think that a lot of the people who write for, say, you know, The Nation or Mother Jones have developed an instinct for saying the thing that seems safe as opposed to the thing that will get you called paranoid or, you know, conspiracy. Yeah, conspiracist, exactly.
Yeah.
So actually, interestingly, the most hostile reviews, in fact, the only hostile reviews Fooled Again has received were in Salon and Mother Jones. Otherwise, the reviews have been quite good, although in, for the most part, marginal places. The only newspaper to have reviewed Fooled Again is the Florida Sun Sentinel. And the only radio networks that will have me on are Air America and Pacifica. No NPR shows will have me on, and these are shows I've done often in the past. It's really remarkable, the sort of absence of reviews, because the book is very thoroughly, very meticulously documented and makes a very strong case, I do say so myself, that there's basically no evidence that Bush-Cheney won re-election, aside from the official numbers. That's the only evidence that exists to, you know, support the claim that they won. But there is copious and specific evidence of all kinds to suggest that they stole it a second time. Here we are all over the world imposing what we call democracy at gunpoint on other peoples. Our own democracy is worse than dysfunctional. It's completely corrupt. And the press, and many on the left, I'm sad to say, just don't get it. Whereas, you know, the grassroots gets it. And I've also been lucky to get some very, very good reviews from some quite conservative Republicans who are people of principle, like Paul Craig Roberts, who was Reagan's assistant treasury secretary, wrote a terrific piece for Counterpunch and LouRockwell.com. This is, we're talking about, I want to repeat this, a civic issue of the utmost importance, not a partisan issue. And I think it's one that the American people understand. Therefore, it's very frustrating that the book's been tuned out by the official press. Yeah.
I can hear it in your voice, actually. Mark Crispin Miller, and understandably so, Mark Crispin Miller is my guest on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Peter Werby. The book is Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal This Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. It's published by Basic Books. The mechanism of these machines, I think we've really talked a lot about on these Air America shows. I don't mean to say that we shouldn't mention it as often as possible, because what we ought to have is a political movement that says no to them. But tell us a little about the African-American vote. If all African-Americans that wanted to vote in 2004 could or had, what would the outcome be? Would it still have been close in Florida?
I don't believe it was close ever in Florida. I think it's by conservative estimate, Kerry won or would have won in 2004 by at least 8 million votes.
8 million?
I believe so. I'm actually working with Steve Freeman, the statistician at the University of Pennsylvania, who also has a new book coming out in a month or so on the theft of the 2004 election. We're collaborating on a piece that will attempt to come up with a pretty solidly grounded statistical estimate of how many votes Kerry actually got. We'll see if we can publish the piece anywhere. You and I can talk about it on the air when it comes to that. But the fact is that the machines were one very important way in which hundreds of thousands of votes were erased without leaving any trace. I mean, that's the frightening thing about these touchscreen machines. They are rightly the focus of most talk now about election reform, the need for election reform. They were by no means the only instrument whereby Bush-Cheney basically disenfranchised the majority. But I think it's the most insidious mechanism because, as I say, you can change the outcome from outside the system with the push of a button.
Sure. There's that
and
famous...
there's no trace left whatsoever. So, you know, it's anybody's guess as to who really won. It's really quite shocking.
Mm-hmm. Mark, let me just say a word to our board operator, and that is we'll go to spots, and then we'll come back with Mark Crispin Miller so you can bring the music up whenever it works. Well, here it comes. All right. Stay with me because we've got a lot more to talk about. And one thing I want to ask when we come back is Al Gore knows that he was cheated out of the presidency. John Kerry knows he was cheated out of the presidency. Why the hell don't they say anything?
It's a good thing to talk about.
All right. Mark Crispin Miller will answer that and other questions when we come back. Again, the book is Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal This Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. One of the longest subtitles in publishing history. Peter Werby with you on The Mike Malloy Show. I'll be right back with Mark Crispin Miller after these.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
We'll be right back.
Hi, True Seekers. You're listening to Peter Werby sitting in for me, Mike Malloy.
Well, thank you, Mike. And joining me in our Air America studios in New York, actually I'm in Detroit, is Mark Crispin Miller. And his book, published by Basic Books, is Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. And, you know, Mark, let's put kind of as a sidebar what we started to talk about, I don't think finished, about how African Americans were excluded from the vote. Because when we left, I said, Gore knows the election was stolen from him. Kerry knows the election was stolen from him. How come they don't say anything?
Well, I'm not sure about Gore. I mean, he has changed considerably since he left politics, and I'm still hopeful that he might say something about it yet. But in Kerry's case, you know, I think it's just fear of the inevitable ridicule that will be that would be poured all over him by the media, and he knows his fellow party members would run for cover. I mean, he told me face-to-face in late October, just as my book was coming out, that he believes the race was stolen, and he was deploring the fact that his fellow Democrats on the Hill refused to discuss the issue. They're all in denial. He was you know, very clear about this. He could see it. And yet when I told the story of our conversation on Democracy Now! A week later, a conversation that was not off the record, by the way, his office categorically denied we'd ever had the exchange. So he immediately struck the very posture he'd been condemning when I was talking to him.
Ran for cover.
He ran for cover. And, you know, it's not about John Kerry. It's not about Al Gore. It's not about their political careers. I mean, I hate to sound hopelessly idealistic here, but the vote is not about, the rights of the candidates, despite the fact that Bush v. Gore, for example, found that, you know, Bush may have been done irreparable harm if the votes had been counted. That is a grotesque and preposterous thing to say.
Right.
The fact is that the election is about the voters. And I do believe that Gore and Kerry were both morally obliged to the people who voted for them, the majority who voted for each of them, to make as big a stink as possible about the theft of the election.
Yeah, and they made no stink. I mean, it occurred to me that what Gore could have done, as Republicans called the troops, the stormtroopers down to Florida, Gore probably should have called for mass demonstrations throughout the country.
Yeah, and certainly a criminal investigation of those goons who stopped the vote count in Miami-Dade. I mean, we know who they are. We've seen their pictures. We know they're all staffers from D.C., from Republican congressional offices, and that the effort to send them down there had basically been supervised by Tom DeLay. They beat people up, Peter, as you know.
Sure.
And yet, I guess officially it didn't happen. Well, I mean, this is all part of the general lawlessness that has engulfed the system under Bush Cheney. And crucial to that, you know, engulfment, of course, has been the nullification of our electoral system. Kerry and Gore, I know quite well that the vote was stolen. Bobby Kennedy Jr. told me on Ring of Fire when I did his show a few months ago here on Air America that Gore told him that his lawyers found out after 2000 that Catherine Harris's office had been given the programming codes for the for the ES&S machines that were used down there. I never heard that anywhere else. And, of course, Kerry has told several people privately that he thinks the race was stolen, but the subject is taboo.
Well, then Clinton and Gore go to the Bush inauguration in early 2001. It's sort of like someone breaks into your house, steals your sound system. You go to a party the next week, and there it is sitting there, and you go up to the host, who you know stole it, and you go, oh, nice box, man.
That's a very good analogy.
You can steal it. I probably stole it from someone. No. Hey, let's before we run out of time, these segments are, this one's coming to an end pretty quickly. Tell us about the black vote and how it was excluded in both 2000 and 2004. Okay. I know it's a long subject, and you take it up in Fooled Again.
Yeah, I want to make clear that Fooled Again is not just about Ohio. This all of 15 pages devoted to Ohio. This stuff went on nationwide. It had to do, first of all, with legal and bureaucratic maneuvers meant to suppress the number of people who could register to vote in the first place. then it meant undersupplying precincts with lots of Democrats in them, undersupplying them with voting machines, so that there were long, long lines among Democrats, you know, working people, people who had to take care of kids. Republican precincts were amply supplied with such machines, so there was no wait there. The machines that were there were programmed often in 21 states that we know of, Peter, to flip Kerry votes into Bush votes. Tens of thousands of accounts of people undergoing this kind of mechanical subversion. And then there was a lot of old-fashioned disinformation and bullying. The mighty Texas Strike Force was the name of a bunch of party activists who were bussed into Ohio by the Republican National Committee. They called people on the phone, threatened them with arrest if they showed up to vote. A lot of people hearing that Election Day was November 3rd, you know.
Absolutely.
Stuff
incredible.
Went on all over the country, and there's also a chapter in Fooligan on the party's interference with the expatriate vote abroad.
Wow, we're going to have to call it at that. There is so much here.
It's
two
really
segments
rich.
Don't
Very
do
rich.
It. Mark Crispin Miller, thanks so much. You got to get fooled again, because in the end of the subtitle, they're going to steal the next one unless we stop them. We got to do it. Mark Crispin Miller, thanks for joining me on the Mike Malloy Show.
Thanks so much, Peter.
I appreciate it. Peter Werby here. We'll be right back. All open line for the next 2 hours. You join us, 866-303-2270. We'll be back after our top of the hour segment.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio. This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
Al Gore returned to the scene of the crime yesterday, Florida. The site was Palm Beach County, home of the infamous butterfly ballot and hanging chads. Gore was introduced as the man who had the presidency stolen. He still refers to himself as a recovering politician. That recovery seems to be going quite well. One Florida newspaper described Gore as humorous, folksy, and rousing, all the things he wasn't in 2000. He's given some of the best speeches of the last few years on Iraq, torture, illegal wiretapping, and global warming. Under George W. Bush, says Gore, democracy itself is in grave danger. He would know. This weekend, he even campaigned against Katherine Harris, the former Secretary of State who helped rig Bush's election. Her Senate campaign is imploding, and Gore's stock is rising. Maybe, just maybe, Al will get the last laugh. For more, visit thenation.com. I'm Ari Berman for Air America Radio.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission. Creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit SearchDogFoundation.org. Made possible by SearchDog USA.
I'm Bill Crowley. Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold is pushing to censure George Bush over domestic spying. In a speech on the Senate floor, Feingold said, when the President of the United States breaks the law, he must be held accountable. Feingold says the Bush authorized an illegal program, then, quote, misled the Congress and the public about the existence and the legality of the program. Democrats turned aside an immediate vote demanded by Republicans. Minority Leader Harry Reid declined to say if he'd vote for the resolution, saying he hadn't seen it. Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman said he'd prefer to solve the problem rather than move against Bush. Republicans quickly blasted Feingold's proposal. Officials are declaring, quote, no threat to human health from the discovery of mad cow disease in an Alabama cow. The Agriculture Commissioner in Alabama says the third animal to test positive in the U.S. never entered the food supply. Ron Sparks saying it's also important to remember mad cow is not contagious, and he says, quote, beef is safe. The IRS says email purporting to be from the tax collector may be an identity theft scam. One IRS commissioner says more thieves are trying to take advantage of the tax filing season through scams known as phishing. That's where email recipients are asked to provide personal information, financial data, and passwords to a supposedly legitimate internet destination. Officials warn phishing scammers may tell taxpayers they're due a refund and have legitimate-looking email. One way to tell the communications are not legit, the IRS says it does not communicate by email at all. An angry judge has put Zacharias Moussaoui's death penalty trial on hold till Wednesday. The federal judge, Leonie Brinkema, says she's considering whether to dismiss the government death penalty case against the Al-Qaeda conspirator. She says the government has made it very difficult for the case to go forward. She told jurors the email trial briefings for seven Federal Aviation Administration officials egregiously broke the rules against coaching witnesses, a hearing scheduled for tomorrow. No ceremony to mark the beginning, but work started on a memorial at the World Trade Center site. Trucks rolled down a ramp into the site with lumber and equipment. Workers with pickaxes and front loaders were removing gravel. However, some relatives of the victims object to altering the footprints of the World Trade Towers, and some are heading into court to try to fight the plan. This is Air America Radio News.
Hey, truth seekers. I've never used that term before. It belongs to Mike Malloy. This is his show, but I'm Peter Werby sitting in for him tonight. And our phone number is 866-303-2270. Mike will be off tomorrow as well. Mike is going to be joining WMIC 92.1 host Lee Rayburn in Madison, Wisconsin. He's on his way there now. And they're going to be at Hawk's Bar and Grill tomorrow, 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. They're going to meet listeners and raise money for the Deb Mayer Legal Defense Fund. Then later at night, and so he's not going to be doing the show tomorrow night either. Laura Flanders will be sitting in. The University of Wisconsin, I got to say this right. I already got upbraided by somebody from Wisconsin. I've been saying Wisconsin, if you can get the difference there. It's Wisconsin, the Whitewater College Democrats at UW. They've invited Mike to give a speech on Tuesday, March 14th at 7 p.m. at the UC Commons. So that's all happening. You go to Mike's site, MikeMalloy.com, and figure it all out. Okay, I want to get you folks on the air. You know, this is, you don't have to talk about what I want, but it was a little disturbing that nobody at all called in about this. Remember, if you were listening in the first hour, I said that March 15th to the 22nd is a week of local action to mark the third anniversary of Bush's crime against peace, the Iraq War. An indictable offense, of course, in the International Criminal Court, which we'll talk about maybe a little later. Anyways, there are incredible activities going on all around the country. If you're listening in the Detroit area, where I'm broadcasting from, you can go to my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. Go to my calendar. But what I was asking is, what's happening in your area? Come on. This isn't all just about talk. Talk is very, very important for people to exchange ideas, for people to learn. I learn from you. Hopefully you learn from me. But ultimately, we've got to act in the real world, beyond the internet, beyond talk radio. We have to do things en masse. This is an opportunity. So let me know what you're doing out there. 866-303-2270. Now, I said I was going to mention just a few stories that came like a flood. I had all this stuff about Russ Feingold, and we'll talk about this censure motion against Bush, the number of billionaires almost up to 800, and how that affects the few billion, not the billionaires, but the few billion who are starving every day in this world, and a number of other issues as well. But Mike in St. Paul, who's listening, sent this to me as I saw it as well. And tell me if you can see the thread here. I mean, I'll say it. You don't have to call in about it. But here, former top judge says U.S. risks edging near to dictatorship. Former top judge says U.S. risks edging near to dictatorship. Sandra Day O'Connor warns of right-wing attacks. Lawyers, quote, must speak up to protect the judiciary. Sandra Day O'Connor, a Republican-appointed judge who retired last month after 24 years on the Supreme Court, said the U.S. is in danger of edging toward dictatorship if the party's right-wingers continue to attack the judiciary. See, Bushko wants to rule in a totalitarian manner. These guys are fascists. And I don't bandy that word around. I don't call conservatives fascists. I don't care. I don't call people who disagree with me fascists. I don't call people that are in the compulsory pregnancy movement fascists. I don't call, you know, all of that stuff. I don't call pro-war people fascists, the few that remain in our country. There are fascists. There are totalitarians. And they are parked at the head of our government. They're both psychoanalytically fascistic and politically fascistic. They want everything submerged within the glory of the state which they head. It has an economy that's driven by war, and then this triumphalist, they said it hasn't worked, victories over the colored masses in other parts of the world. I mean, it's like, they're not even like Hitler. Everybody says, Bush is like Hitler. He's like Mussolini, except that he kills people. He's responsible for this mountain of corpses in Iraq. All right, that was from the London Guardian. Sandra Day O'Connor says the U.S. is at risk from becoming a dictatorship. Arab central banks move assets out of dollar. Well, where is this going to end up? How come this isn't the lead story? Middle Eastern anger over the decision by U.S. to block a Dubai company from buying five of its ports hit the dollar yesterday as a number of central banks said that they were considering switching reserves into euros. The United Arab Emirates, which includes Dubai, said it was looking to move one-tenth of its dollar reserves into euros, while the governor of the Saudi Arabian Central Bank condemned the U.S. move as discriminatory. If I don't even know if I could explain. I'm not even 100% sure I understand, because money is so bizarre that it represents value and how is value assigned. And I mean, but let me tell you that there are real-world results from these machinations of this wealthy world elite. Of now, there's apparently 800 billionaires, many of them living over in the Middle East. And the idea that they begin trading in euro or having a petro-euro rather than a petro-dollar could spell some real difficulties for the U.S. economy. That was from, let's see, the London Independent. All right. Here, from the Jerusalem Post, the Pentagon is looking into the possibility of Israel launching a strike against Iran's nuclear facilities. And this comes, wait a minute, I got to go to the internet here real quickly so I don't misspeak this. Yeah, China and Russia have rejected proposals from the United States and England and France, members of the UN Security Council, for a statement demanding that Iran clear up suspicions about its nuclear program. So the United States is convinced, and we don't know, we have a pack of liars that run the government, so maybe they're trying to fashion fission. I mean, it would make sense, because if you have weapons of mass destruction, you don't get invaded like North Korea. If you don't have them, and the United States knows that you don't have them, but says you do, then you get invaded. So very possibly, and they're talking about regime change and all of this. The United States is same characters that sent us into this illegal fiasco in Iraq are talking about the same thing. The discussions, which were described as intelligence-oriented and not policy-oriented, examined the likelihood of an Israeli preemptive attack against Iran, and the method in which such an attack could be carried out. The United States would have to give, how is this? The United States would have to give clearance for Israeli planes to fly over Iraq. Don't we have this country that's in North America, and we're controlling airspace in Iraq? Doesn't anybody, I mean, I know most of you do, but how come the majority of Americans don't think this is real strange and out of not a permissible situation? Anyways, this will be another disaster. If Israel was the bomb a Muslim country, all hell is going to break loose. For one thing, the allies, I mean, what we have essentially in Baghdad now is a pro-Iranian Shiite government. And Muqtadir Sadr, head of the Sadr army, said that they will attack the United States with everything imaginable if there's an attack on their ally, Iran. This from the Jerusalem Post, right? The other thing, the last one, burst oil pipe causes catastrophe in Alaska. This guy, see, I don't know, maybe he's listening, so I shouldn't disparage him. If you are, I'm going to disparage you some. I read him this story from the Independent in London. Burst oil pipeline causes catastrophe in Alaska. Burst pipeline in Alaska's North Slope has caused the Arctic region's worst oil spill, spreading more than 250,000 gallons of crude oil over an area used by caribou herds. He said, it's a drop in the bucket. These guys. And it's led people to question the Bush administration's drive for more oil exploitation there. Do you think? You think it might lead some people to think that oil is this poisonous, toxic substance that wherever it is, when it's pumped out of the wellhead, it's toxic when it's shipped, when it's refined, when it's used. We have to fight all these wars that we have probably spent trillions of dollars of our tax dollars to ensure this flow of oil, which really ensures profits to the oil companies, the buddies of every United States political presidency since World War II. Do we have any time? I think what I'm going to do, Jason, the music, please. There it is. Gotta love it. Thank you, Jason, doing the heavy lifting in New York City, Air America Radio Network headquarters. I'm Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. I will get to your calls when we come back. 866-303-2270. We're open line for the rest of the show. Please join us on Air America.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
Hi, Truth Seekers. You're listening to Peter Werby sitting in for me, Mike Malloy.
Well, thank you, Mike. We're back. Going to get your calls. Got to share this with you, though. This just in from CNN. You can go to CNN.com. Growing dissatisfaction with the war in Iraq has driven President Bush's approval rating to a new low of 36%. So it's almost two-thirds of the population have finally caught on to him. And don't think about, maybe it could go lower, but we're talking about the fascist third, 33 1/3%. Then there's this 3% that isn't paying attention. But this third, this 33% of it, if they were shown films of Bush partaking in cannibalism, they would still support him. I mean, they would have to tune in to Rush and Hannity, who would explain why, in this particular case, Bush eating the brain of somebody was really okay. All right, let's go to our phones. 866-303-2270. Here's Killian in Portland, Maine. He's listening on The Voice. Go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Worthy. Hey. I like your show.
Hey, Dad, there's a call for you. You can just call me Peter.
Peter. I want to ask very quickly about what you and Mark Crispin Miller just talked about, the irony of Gore and Kerry attending the inauguration after the election had just been stolen from them and the American people, as was pointed out. It only makes sense if you've got some kind of rug to pull out from under a person, or if you can really make it worth his while to not say anything. You know, an offer he couldn't refuse, as they say. And you just think of Harry Whittington, the Texas lawyer Cheney shot in the face.
Yeah.
And I can imagine why Whittington would keep quiet about the details. If
sure.
there was anything illegal, he might have been an accessory. But how do you explain Whittington walking out of the hospital where he very nearly died and apologizing to the Cheney family for all the pain he, Whittington, caused? I mean, what kind of rug must these neocons have under people that they can shoot them in the face and make them smile?
You really have to go look at biographies of Stalin and Hitler to get an idea of that kind of mentality. That you're sorry that you stepped in the way of this buckshot of the exalted leader.
Huh.
I mean, some people think that that Whittington was ribbing Cheney, that Bush was really the president.
Yeah.
And so it pissed off, Whittington or whatever the hell his name was.
Well, it's very much like they got Kerry and Gore to apologize for stepping in the way of them stealing the election. It's the same thing, I think.
Yeah, it is. All right, thank you very much, Killian. Thanks for calling. Here's Will in Georgia. Will, hi, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hello, how's it going tonight?
Going great. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I was thinking about this voting thing here because I'm one of these retired Marine-type guys, and I take my vote pretty serious here.
Sure.
I was thinking, though, why don't, you know, the Democrats, you know, just decide, you know, that we're going to actually write our votes down, turn them in, so we will have an actual count of who we voted for. Then we can challenge it, you know, when the votes start coming up all screwed up. You know, you have somebody at each poll or something, you do your vote and everything, then you write down who you actually voted for, your name, your address and everything, and if it don't come out right, then you got something to stand on. You ain't screwing around with these machines.
I got you. You know, here's the sad part of it, Will. You're thinking creatively, and I think that's excellent. What is really unfortunate, why isn't the Democratic Party that knows that they have two elections in a row stolen from them, why aren't they doing the creative thinking and coming up with this idea, and if it's a good one that you've just suggested, then they use that one. If they say, well, that's pretty good, but I got another one. Instead, we're the ones that are leading the reform effort, and maybe that's what it should be. Will, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining me. Michael in Texas, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Mr. Ruby, or Peter, sorry about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, appreciate talking to you tonight.
Yeah, I hate to use the same joke twice in two calls in a row, but go ahead.
Hey, I'm going to answer Killian real quick. I think one of the reasons why that Gore and Kerry back down so much is that they play this politics of, well, they're playing sour grapes when they paint them in a bad place in the American public. And that's partly why I think they back down from that, because they want to preserve their political career.
Yeah, well,
for whatever reason.
They're eroding the possibility of it. I mean, when I voted for Kerry, the first time in my life I've ever voted for a Democrat for president, and my lip curls now when I even hear the name Kerry.
Yeah. Well, hey, I got some ideas that I've been thinking about. And the guest that you had was great. I've heard him a handful of times, and I'm going to go find his book now because I want to find out how. That's the real question. How do we stop them from, again? And one of the things I've been kicking around and thinking about is why can't we have a national holiday for election? We'll move it to a Saturday.
Well, I know, because imagine the sequential humiliation and drudgery of having to work at some lousy job, then standing in line because the Republicans that are in charge of the voting process, say, in Ohio, make sure that there's not enough voting machines, as opposed to having...
November.
Why not a two-day holiday? Why not have it on a warm month? Like spring or September.
About the 4th of July weekend.
Well, that's too hot. People are on vacation. We got to get and have it on 2 days. I think there are some countries, maybe like New Zealand. No, the Republicans certainly don't want that because they want to make it as hard as possible for working people and poor people to vote. But why in the hell the Democrats aren't banging the drums for this is way beyond me. But that's a great idea. Thank you, Michael. The book that Michael said he's going to go get is the latest by Mark Crispin Miller, Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. Go get it. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show, 866-303-2270. Right back.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
You're already doing what's hard for your health. You diet. That's hard. You do regular exercise. That's harder. You even get a colonoscopy. The hardest. If your doctor says you're at risk for a heart attack, he could tell you that adding Bayer low dose is a simple way to help prevent 1 out of 3 heart attacks. Now that's simple. Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer low dose. A little does a lot.
Who was the first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control? First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags? And who is working on future safety innovations like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the civil rights movement. And now we're trying to develop a silver rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
It's the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby, broadcasting from Detroit, sitting in for Mike. He'll be back on Wednesday. He's in Madison, Wisconsin, going to do a couple of events. If you want to find out all about it, MikeMalloy.com is where to go. I actually told myself I wasn't going to spend a lot of time criticizing Bush. I mean, why do we have to bother? Like I said just a few minutes ago, it's the fascist third. It's the only people left supporting him. Somehow I just can't resist. Here, Bush, according to Bush, this is at CNN.com, Iraq turning away from the abyss. I mean, doesn't this guy watch television? He says he doesn't. Maybe he really doesn't. The Iraqi response to sectarian tensions created after the bombing of the Samarra mosque in February gave hope to the dream of a free democratic Iraq, according to Bush. I mean, I'm sort of at a loss for words. Here's what he said. The situation in Iraq is still tense, and we're still seeing acts of sectarian violence and reprisal. Bush said this in a speech yesterday, or today, I guess. Yet out of this crisis, we've also seen signs of a hopeful future. Okay. The attacks on the mosque, one of the holiest sites to Shiite Muslims, was meant to ignite a civil war between Iraqi Shiites and minority Sunnis, Bush said. But the Iraqi people made their choice. They looked into the abyss and did not like what they saw. They did not like what they saw. Is that right? Is that good English? Iraqis have shown the world that they want a future of peace. I mean, is he reading different news accounts and seeing different television programs than I am? I don't know. He accused Iran of providing material support to the insurgency in Iraq. Now, you know, he's got everything backwards. He's got everything backwards. The insurgency is mainly made up of the Sunnis, right? The people in power are pro-Iranian. They're the ones that are getting the weapons. They're the ones that are forming these death squads within these militias. This is the people that Bush sees as being the hope of Iraq. Well, all right, let's continue on. Here's RB in Saskatchewan. RB, thanks for making our show international. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Hey, RB. Dude, he waited all this time. Put him back on hold. We'll try him. Give him one more chance. He waited a long time. Calvin in Philadelphia. Calvin, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, it's me.
It's you.
How you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks.
I wanted to speak on the spineless Democrats that we have in office.
Aren't they bad?
Oh my goodness. You know, a Democrat steps up with some spine. And the first thing that the other Democrats do is do what cockroaches do when the lights turn on. They run into their holes.
That's right. You're talking about this proposal to censure Bush by Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold.
Yes, but it also speaks on what you talked about earlier about the cheating on the election of 2000 and 2004 with Gore and Kerry. Do they really expect that they're going to run and be contenders? Do they really think that Democrats or even people in any the American people are going to vote for them when they show no spine at all?
Calvin. I don't get what their strategy is. I mean, they sort of think if they just are real quiet and kind of hang back, the whole Bush Co. edifice will fall of its own weight. It will to some extent, but it's got to be pushed. It's got to be pushed.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. The other thing that I want to speak on is you know, when you look at them, they really have no choice but back the truth. Because here's what's going to happen. And I want all the Democratic politicians hear this. I want them to hear this. If you don't back the truth, you're going to be out of a job. If you,
you're saying the truth, right? The truth.
Right. If you don't,
yeah, okay.
Right, if you don't back the truth, you're going to be out of a job.
I agree. Thank you, Calvin. You have said it. Here's what George Clooney said, according to the New York Daily News. He has a message for Democratic office holders who voted for the war in Iraq, only to claim later they'd been misled by Bush. F you. Except he said it, right? He said it out. How come I can't say it? Why can't I say it? I mean, you know what he said. It's a quote. I shouldn't say it. I'm old school. I can barely bring myself to say pissed off. I never could say that even, because I started when you said something like that on the air, man, you were out of a job. But I'm sitting there watching like television with my wife and some silly show, and someone says that, and I go, whoa, guess I will too. Clooney's argument, directed at the likes of presidential wannabes, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, John Kerry, and John Edwards, is actually more nuanced than that, but not by much. Clooney writes today on the HuffingtonPost.com, the fear of being criticized could be paralyzing. Pumping up the volume after banging, that's part doesn't matter. He says, just look at the way so many Democrats caved in the run-up to the war. In 2003, a lot of us were saying, where is the link between Saddam and bin Laden? What does Iraq have to do with 9/11? We knew it was bull. Whatever. Which is why it drives me crazy to hear all these Democrats saying, we were misled. It makes me want to shout, F you! You weren't misled. You were afraid of being called unpatriotic. And how many senators were there? Wasn't there? Was it 27 or 37? And I'm glad to see that at least the two Michigan senators, the ones that are from my state, Debbie Stabenow and Carl Levin, voted against it. Now, they knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction. They knew it. In fact, everybody that voted for it, including Hillary Clinton, including Joe Biden, including John Kerry and John Edwards, were just these slimeball opportunists who were thinking, well, when I want to run for president in 2008, and I don't want them saying that I didn't support this very popular and successful war. Calvin's right. Calvin's definitely right. So Feingold says he's going to introduce this measure in the Senate, and the Democrats are running for cover. Now, Bill Frist, the Tennessee Republican, the majority leader, called it a crazy political move, wild, out of control. The last part was me, but he called it a crazy political move that anybody would censure the president of the United States, who has committed high crimes and misdemeanor willfully by his domestic eavesdropping program, that as far as we know has created no more safety for us. Now, Frist, who appeared on This Week, said the censure would undermine the nation's effort to fight terrorism and defend it against its enemies. You know, it doesn't have a lot of enemies. We know that some pretty determined right-wing political religious wackos, if they're willing to risk their lives, they can do anything, like blow themselves up or run a plane into a building. I don't know how in the hell that can be combated. And yet, they're talking about a situation here. Let me see, where is this here? We are now, according to Frist, at war, in an unprecedented war, where we do have people who really want to take us down. Now, does he really want to argue to the American people that this handful of religious nuts that hate the United States, not because of the freedom that we have, but because we are always intervening in their affairs and killing people and stationing our troops 6,000-7,000 miles from home, does he really think they can, quote, take us down? We need to have a war economy. The United States depends on a war economy, and we've done so since the first quarter of 1942, which is the only way we got out of the Depression. This is massive Keynesian economics. It's a transfer of private wealth. You and I work. The government takes it. It then transfers it to these enormous war industries as a way of pump priming the economy. Without it, these people think we're dead. I mean, they may have made it a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't know. So let me see here. The Bush administration has strongly resisted calls from Democrats and some Republicans for a full review into the surveillance program, saying such inquiries could disclose national security information that could help Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. This suggests that they are so sophisticated, and they are, I mean, you know, it's like Fu Manchu, or you know, who is, Professor Moriarty, you know, Sherlock Holmes' nemesis, that somehow they have this superhuman capacity for technology and all this stuff. There's probably a couple hundred guys in the world that are financed by some of Bush's pals and allies in the Middle East, and they can do harm. We've seen that. We know that, and they should be stopped. But to say that we're in a war is absolute 100% nonsense. All right, let's see. Where are we going here? Let's go to Eddie. Eddie's in Santa Barbara. Eddie, hi. It's Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. You're on the air.
Peter, how are you doing? You're doing a great job.
Well, thank you.
Hey, I just want to read a quick story about the Bush cronyism, how far it goes back. I was going out with this Korean girl when the 2000 election was going on and all the fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And she related to me. She's like saying, why are you getting so upset? And I'm like, well, don't you know that George W. Bush, his brother, is Jeb Bush? And she was like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And don't you know that their father was the president before? And she was just amazed.
Wow.
You know, because there's, you know, corruption going on around the world. And in Korea, she was telling me all about it. And she was just amazed.
Well,
and,
you know, Eddie, that's indicative of this naive population. We probably have the least politically savvy population of any country. Maybe any country. I don't know. All right, thanks for the story. I appreciate it. The Mike Malloy Show is what you got on Air America Radio Network. Peter Werby here with you for Mike. 866-303-2270. We're going to take a break. I can get some email, by the way, at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Back after these.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
You're already doing what's hard for your health. You diet. That's hard. You do regular exercise. That's harder. You even get a colonoscopy. The hardest. If your doctor says you're at risk for a heart attack, he could tell you that adding Bayer low dose is a simple way to help prevent one out of three heart attacks. Now that's simple. Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer low dose. A little does a lot.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning, totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Hi, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here doing the honors. Here's Phil in southern Indiana. Phil, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, Peter, I was wondering, you had said something earlier about the Republicans being in charge in Ohio on the election, and I was just curious what you meant by that.
What Republican governor, the what was his name, Blackwell, was the Secretary of State?
Yeah. And one other thing. Why don't they just pre-test these machines a day before the election and then take the count of the pre-test, and if there's a discrepancy, call them on them?
Well, I'll tell you, Phil, what any election should have is the confidence of the citizenry, and that's not here right now. Why in the world do we need these machines? I mean, why do we have to have these instantaneous results? If we had the old-fashioned, and I know there was corruption back then, too, ballot, what they call ballot box stuffing, but we've moved pretty far beyond that. There was not a problem that these machines solved. In other words, it wasn't like that the hand-marked ballots created some problem, and they said, oh, well, let's get these new, brand-new touch machines in. It was just this insane modernization for the sake of modernization.
Yeah, I understand.
All right, Phil, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here's Freddie in Miami. Freddie, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete. How you doing?
Doing great, thanks.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of points, just one or two. maybe they don't direct, well, they do in one or two cases direct to your program tonight. The issue is, from my point of view, my small point of view, and I do read newspapers, and I do watch CNN and C-SPAN, is maybe the Democrats don't do anything or don't step up to the plate is because they do get it. And what they get is that we're now currently living under a dictatorship. And they're gonna rule in the future. 2006 and 2008 will be theirs.
Meet the Democrats.
My opinion.
You mean the Democrats will rule?
No. No. The other party.
Oh, the Republicans.
Oh, yeah. They're getting ready for the ball.
Yeah, so they don't want to become enemies of the state publicly like
yes,
me
sir.
And Mike Malloy. And
that's correct.
So we're all going to have, we're going to be in the same camp together, huh?
Yes, sir. This is just my far view opinion. Because it seems strange that when John Murtha stepped up to the plate to really denounce the war, I mean, and he's a heavy as far as the Democrats concerned, with not only the war people inside the defense, but also with the defense contractors, you would think that you would see John Kerry side to side with John Murtha. Where is Kerry?
Yeah.
Nowhere. Nowhere to be found. Okay, point number two. Now, a couple of nights back, I watched C-SPAN, and I believe it was the Prime Minister of China. And one of his points was that that China, to make the long story short, will defend Taiwan because they believe that Taiwan belongs to the motherland.
Right. They say it's an integral part of China. Yeah.
Right. Now, let's just for assumption's sake, that the USA steps in because they love war and defends Taiwan. Now, you would think that in a few hours we would have bombs flying all over the place, but the way I see it economically is that once this declaration is stated by China, all China would have to do without pressing a single button as far as bomb is concerned is start dumping their treasury bonds on the market.
Absolutely. They've got the whip hand over us.
Amen to that. And I would like to see all the corporate billionaires of the USA run for their Pepto-Bismol.
Well, I think we'd all be running for it. Thanks, Freddie. Appreciate it. Thanks for your ideas. Peter Werby here with you on the Mike Malloy Show. Our phone number is 866-303-2270. Here is James in Sacramento. James, hi. It's Peter Werby. Hey, James.
Peter Werby. You're doing an excellent job. I do miss the realist, Mike Malloy. But anyway, I had just a quick 2 points. You know, I was just thinking why the Democrats are afraid to stand up. And I came down to only 3 possible reasons. Either their hands are dirty through corruption, or they have been co-opted, or they are intimidated and fear for their life from the powers that be.
How about all 3?
Well, and are all three.
Yeah.
I kind of disagree a little bit with the caller. I think if we do kind of stand up, the American people, they say if you lead, they will follow. So hopefully we won't be sheep in a sense and just follow blindly. But I also had one other quick point is mm-hmm. that I hear a lot of talk on Air America about religion and science, and I'm a spiritual religious person, but I also believe in evolution and science. You know, I believe God is everything and everywhere. And, I don't have a conflict with that. I just think people have, you know,
gotcha.
Tried to, you know, and I just want to say one other thing. The book of Matthew's in the Bible says God rises on good and evil. So, you know, he gets a rise on both of us. So we're here to work it out. So
thank you, James.
Hopefully we'll stand up and work it out, okay?
All right. Yeah, James listening on KCTC. Let's see if we have time for another call. Gentleman in New York, do we? Sure. So let's do what? Quickly, says Jason. I'd like to have some of these calls hang on because I'd like to hear particularly one wants to talk about the gridiron roast. This was where Bush and Cheney were yakking it up about Cheney shooting that guy in the face, his buddy. So I think what we're going to do is just hang on and we'll get your calls after the break. Now, we're going to be heading into our third and final hour, so I hope you'll avail yourself of our toll-free number, 866-303-2270. I'm Peter Werbe. If you'd like to go to my website, easy job, name is not worthy. I should have changed my name to that a long time ago. A lot of people call me that, but actually it's Werbe, W-E-R-B-E. So it's peterwerbe.com. In for Mike Malloy. 866-303-2270. We're going to take our top of the hour break, get you some news, and right back with our third and final hour on the Air America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
The Controversial Classics Collection, Volume 2, is now available on DVD. Inside are three revolutionary films about the power of media. All the President's Men, Dog Day Afternoon, and Network. Movies that had a huge social impact and changed attitudes on the way we view media. Now masterfully restored with superior picture and sound, this collection contains over 5 hours of new bonus material. Own these controversial American classics today.
Radio News, I'm Jeff Weiser. One Senate Democrat says President Bush's approval of domestic eavesdropping without warrants should lead to a censure of the president. Wisconsin's Russ Feingold says the program breaks the law and that Bush must be held accountable. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist dismissed the Feingold motion as a political stunt. Frist attempted to quash the motion with a rapid vote, but it was postponed. Facing growing public anxiety in the U.S., President Bush has embarked on another defense of the war in Iraq. Correspondent Terry Moore reports on the first of a series of planned presidential speeches on Iraq.
Bush stressed the work in Iraq is hard, but he cited a comprehensive strategy for victory.
On the political side, we're helping Iraqis build a strong democracy. On the economic side, we're continuing reconstruction efforts and helping Iraqis build a modern economy. And on the security side, we're striking terrorist targets and training the Iraqi security forces.
Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid dismissed the president's speech.
We need a political solution to the problems in Iraq. We don't need people to tell us how well the war is going.
This month marks the third anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, a conflict that has left more than 2,300 American troops dead. I'm Terry Moore in Washington.
Meanwhile, another low is being reported by major pollsters in the measurement of President Bush's popularity. The numbers released Monday by the CNN USA Today survey shows the president's approval rating slipping to just 36%, down 2 points from its previous poll. Lawyers defending two former Enron executives say their clients were victims of wrongdoing by the company's former chief financial officer. During cross-examination in the Houston trial of Ken Lay and Jeffrey Skilling, defense attorneys portrayed former CFO Andrew Fastow as a liar who stole millions from the company and led the corporation into bankruptcy. Fastow is testifying against his former bosses who are accused of conspiracy and fraud tied to the downfall of Enron. Follow-up tests by the U.S. Agriculture Department have now confirmed that a 10-year-old cow in Alabama was afflicted with mad cow disease. The Alabama Agriculture Commissioner, Ron Sparks, says the cow had been in the state less than a year and never entered the food supply. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
Welcome back to the third and final hour of the Mike Malloy Show on the Air America Radio Network. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike. Mike is out tonight. He and Kathy Malloy is producer and wife, and I suspect their little girl, Molly, who is with them, I suspect, are going to be in Madison. We're after midnight, so it's already Tuesday Eastern time, and in Madison, Wisconsin. I got to say that right. It's not Wisconsin, it's Wisconsin. They're going to be at a little get-together Tuesday morning, 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. in Madison's Hawks Bar and Grill. And Mike is going to be joined by WMIC 92.1 host Lee Rayburn. And they're going to be greeting listeners, and they're going to raise some money for the Deb Mayer Legal Defense Fund. That at night, Tuesday, tomorrow, today, however you're looking at it, 7 p.m. at the UCC Commons. The UC Commons. It's UW Whitewater College Democrats. Mike is going to give a speech. He's not going to be on tomorrow night either. Laura Flanders will be sitting in for him. I'm going to be sitting in for Mike all next week. It's going to be great for me. I hope it's great for you. 866-303-2270. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducted tonight trumpeter Miles Davis. I mean, he was getting rocky and funky towards the end of his career. Actually, I didn't appreciate that end of his creativity. Wait, I'm being told I'm wrong. Jason, you're mad because you like end of his career? Okay. Miles is great, but I didn't think he was too great towards the end of things. Yeah, I agree. I agree. The 50s were great. I mean, you know, I just got a new LP turntable. Well, actually, it's been about 6 months now. So I've been playing all these 50s Miles stuff with some of his classic stuff and into the early 60s. He's great. All right, let's not argue. Lynyrd Skynyrd, I could do without them, but what the hell. Blondie, Black Sabbath, one of my faves, and the Sex Pistols. They joined the pantheon of rock's greatest performers, I'm sure, in an elegant ceremony. Really, yeah. The Sex Pistols wrote on their website, although it says here in the article, they compared the hall to urine in wine. Actually, they called it piss in wine. They called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a piss stain. So they still got the spirit. And that's the rock spirit. But I'll tell you, I got invited, let me see, it was 1999, to an induction ceremony. I think it was for Ray Charles. But I know Ray Charles performed in the Loving Spoonful. Sir Paul was there, Eric Clapton, and it was, Jason, what's that big fancy hotel on Lexington Avenue? You have no idea. You don't inhabit places like that? Well, I don't either, but they had us up. I think it was one of the big TV, rock networks. I don't think it was MTV, but maybe it was. But anyway, we were staying at the, what is it? It's the W. Oh, man, I wouldn't stay at a hotel called the W now. But that was before W had such awful meaning. Anyways, it was a grand night. Even maybe it wasn't in the spirit of rock and roll. It was at this big fancy hotel. I think it's got a hyphenated name. Someone will remind me. All right. Enough of that. The Waldorf Astoria, it was, Jason, indeed. That's exactly what it was. I have here, I don't know why I saved this. I know, because it's so horrible. It's called The Richest 691 People in the World. And this is dated, it's all kind of dog-eared, March 12, 2005. The 691 people, the richest 691 people on Earth have over 2 million, how does this go? $2,200,000,000,000 in wealth. Okay? That was then. Now it's gone up. The number of billionaires is up to a record 793. Number of billionaires around the world rose by 102 to 793 over the past year, and their combined wealth is $2.6 trillion, according to Forbes magazine's 2006 rankings of the world's richest people. Microsoft Corporation founder Bill Gates was again the world's richest man for the 12th year running. His net worth rose to $50 billion. Warren Buffett, the chair of Berkshire Hathaway Inc., again ranked second. But his fortune fell by $2 billion to $42 billion. Martha Stewart, who was new to the list last year, dropped off completely. She's worth, she shrank from $1 billion to half a billion dollars. Now, there's a direct relationship to the ills of the world and to the fact that this enormous amount of money, $2.6 trillion, is parked in the hands of under 800, mostly men. That they can have, I mean, it's not even a matter of such luxury. They could probably have the luxury that they have if they were multimillionaires. I mean, you can only consume up to a certain level. Somebody, Manuel, who's listening in Mexico City, sent me some email that had films on it. Excuse me, of photographs. I don't know if I can quickly get to this because I can't remember exactly where it was. But somewhere, it might have been in one of the United Arab Emirates. Nah, I can't get to it. That was this home. It was like 40,000 square feet or 100,000 square feet. He had 20 Rolls Royces, had a BMW completely made out of silver. And I'm sure he could probably do that on, you know, with $100 million wealth or $200 million wealth or something like that. So this this accumulation of excess wealth, way beyond the capacity of anybody to consume or even to buy governments and buy politicians, it's one thing that money does, has some catastrophic effects on billions of people throughout the world. We know there's poor people. We know that there's people living on very small amount of money per year. We know there's persistent starvation as a permanent institution. We know that there's at least a billion people that go to bed hungry every year. We know that poverty causes wars. We see the results, particularly in Africa. We see the standard of living and how low it is as millions, tens of millions of people flood into the cities of Africa, Latin America, and Asia because their way of life is being destroyed by free trade and neoliberalism and globalization. And there is enough wealth out there that no one needs to live like that, except that we have an international system that does this. Gives under 800 men $2.6 trillion while people starve and die of AIDS. Two separate categories, too. And you know, there's the few right-wingers that are listening. He's, oh, he's going to talk about redistribution of income. Well, you're damn right I am. This is criminal. It is mass murder of proportions that make the Nazis and the Western settlement of the Western Hemisphere, the European settlement of the Western Hemisphere, look like some car accidents. I mean, we have condemned by this structure that rewards this few number of people at the expense of billions. I mean, one can't even conceive of this. Now, all of us have seen pictures of starvation. People have seen the way the poor live. I was in Caracas, Venezuela at the end of January and was close up to some of these dwellings, and I just felt, I don't know what it was, this feeling of humiliation or mortification that I had this these riches, and people lived in circumstances this mean, and it was absolutely unnecessary. President Chavez of Venezuela says he's going to address housing problems because he's already begun to address medical care, food for everyone, education, but I don't even know how you can deal with this housing problem. Caracas has 5 to 7 million inhabitants. They don't even know. They tried to take a census. It didn't work. So I mean, that's a pretty big spread, 5 to 7 million people. And yet this system is defended. Here, I actually mentioned this. By the way, $1 trillion was spent last year on weaponry. I thought I had this... this letter from one of these, here. I brought this up on my Detroit show last night. And here's what a Christopher wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, which you can use as well. He says, the only places, oh, and by the way, I directed people to my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. And I direct people to this story about the 793 billionaires. And there's also a photograph of a starving child. And I don't really like to do that. I mean, this is a real kid. His ribs are showing. He looks awful. And so here's what Christopher writes. The only places we've seen large amounts of children starving like the one on your website is in places where people like you, meaning me, are in charge. The Soviet Ukraine, Ethiopia, and North Korea. Ask yourself where that child lives. I guarantee you it's in a place where private millionaires and billionaires are not allowed to exist, a place where nobody is permitted to trade with the West. Now, I was thinking, what should I say to this guy? Probably just should have said goodbye. All right, let's have some miles. I love it. Anyways, I wrote him back, you're low on the compassion scale, as are all right-wingers. You would rather defend the obscene wealth of your betters than feed starving children. The rich love saps like you. Please don't write back. But come on back after these. We're going to take your calls. 866-303-2270. Let's listen to a little Miles as long as we can.
Listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
What are you reading?
Soda Can.
Like it?
I've read it before.
Yeah, me too. I found it rather predictable. Carbonated water, aspartame.
I like the part about the phenylketonuric, though. Sounds so ominous.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What do you think the author meant by canned under the authority of?
Oh, that part did seem to come out of nowhere.
That's what I thought.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
We'll be right back.
And now, back to Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show.
I'll just keep that music going. Peter Werbe here. Oh, I love it. Wow. When I get my Air America show, this Peter, did I say that Peter Werbe sitting in for Mike Malloy? We're going to be doing a lot of music. Miles Davis gets inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You get all this music. All right, ooh, I got to go to my screen so I can introduce who is going to get on the air. 866-303-2270. Here's Lee in Oregon. Lee, hi. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I saw Black Sabbath backstage, Chicago 74. It was great.
Wow.
When you mention that. But anyway, about this roast that Bush and Cheney are going to, I just find it revolting to have so many people die within hours of this show and days of it, Americans and other civilians, children, and they're up there laughing and joking.
Yeah, and Bush is making jokes about Cheney shooting his pal in the face.
Yeah, I know. It's just sick, you know. And just think if you were like one of the parents of one of these soldiers that of our soldiers that were killed in Iraq. Or coming back amputated and blind. And
well, wait a minute, Lee. If we don't laugh, then the terrorists win.
This is ridiculous. I mean, put your position in as one of the parents and then getting this news, and this guy doesn't even have enough respect to go to work or to do something more to prevent something.
Well, you know what is equally disgusting? This is this the press one, the gridiron roast? But this is, it's one of those things where all the insiders in Washington go, and it turns out to be Republicans and Democrats and the media. I mean, they're just the good old boys. That's when they talk about inside the Beltway. That's what they're talking about.
If there was a war on and Clinton went to one of these, the media would jump all over him for not getting his butt back and making solutions so our American citizens weren't being killed.
You got it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Here's Graham in Virginia. Graham, hi. You're on the air.
I don't think they made enough of the Zogby poll. What does it show? 80 to 90% of the troops think they're there because Saddam wasn't connected with 9/11.
That was odd. I mean, most of them said they wanted to come home, 70% of them.
But
it was this high percentage that thought they were avenging 9/11.
They're killing and being killed because they think they're avenging 9/11.
Yeah.
And the ridiculous thing is the other day I was trying to find the audio of Bush saying, you know, there was no involvement. And I came across the White House site, and this is the White House's own site, www.whitehouse.gov/news/releases. 2003-09, anyway, and this is remarks by the President after meeting with members of Congress Conference Committee on Energy Legislation. One of the reporters asks, Mr. President, Rice and Rumsfeld both said yesterday, this would have been on Wednesday, September the 16th, 2003, they have no evidence Iraq had anything to do with September 11th.
Uh-huh.
And his response is, we've had no evidence that Saddam was involved with September 11th. So, I mean, this is like 2.5 years ago. You'd think Rumsfeld or somebody or the Democrats would be informing the troops. I mean, if 80 or 90% of them believe this, this is like over 100,000 troops.
I know.
They're out there, got this hate on for these people. And it's sad. I mean, they've been brainwashed. If they knew the truth, I mean, if somebody would say, here's the truth, here's where to find it, right on the White House website today, here's what the president said 2.5 years ago.
Well, you know, Graham, this is really a case, though, of what Noam Chomsky calls willful ignorance. It's all out there. I mean, who knows? Thousands of troops could be listening to this program through the Internet. They have access to the Internet. The information is there. All right. Thank you, Graham. Thanks for bringing that up. Let's go to Armin in Sarasota. Armin, hi. You're on the air. It's Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brother Peter, how you doing?
Well, hi, Armin.
You know, Peter, I'm sitting here thinking and listening to these callers tonight, and, you know, what is reality here? And I've come to this conclusion. I'll see what your opinion of my thesis is. It seems to me that the less influence that the major media has over deceiving the people and brainwashing them and programming them, is proportionately reflected in the uprise of these lousy voting machines that they can steal votes on.
I'm not getting the math here, but go ahead.
In other words, the Internet, the influence that the Internet is having, swaying people with an ability to have an open mind to seeing the truth of what's really being perpetrated by the government of the United States on the people, is obvious in, as you see, the media influence has to be proportionately going down over what they used to have over the people. They used to always have, they're very powerful. They're extremely powerful, but they're losing a considerable amount of their power in, by competing against the Internet, because the truth, like you say, on the Internet's out there for
it,
people
it
to
is.
Have.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could be one of the reasons, Armin, that finally the truth has started to seep through, is that the same media machine, this propaganda machine, this bullhorn for the government in 2003, suddenly has turned and started biting the hand that feeds it. Good. That's what I say. All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back in the Mike Malloy Show. 866-303-2270. I got a pretty interesting email about somebody's voicemail. I'll tell you about that when we get back. Peter Werbe here on the Air America Radio Network.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
Now out on DVD, Good Night and Good Luck, nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning, totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
We'll be right back.
Hi, Truth Seekers. You're listening to Peter Werbe sitting in for me, Mike Malloy.
Well, thank you, Mike Malloy. 866-303-2270. Let me read you an email before the one I said I was going to read to you. Before the break, Brenda in Texas writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. She says, and this speaks to what our caller from Virginia said about how the troops, 80% of them, 90% of them, believe that Saddam Hussein was connected with the attack on the World Trade Center. And I said it was willful ignorance. Brenda writes in from Texas, I'm acquainted with a Bush loyalist. I made several attempts to wake her up by presenting a case that Bush is a liar, a thief, and is totally corrupt. As I was speaking to her, she nodded in agreement, and I asked her if she was aware of the horrible things Bush has done. To my surprise, she said, yes. I was stunned and asked her how she could continue to support such an evil man when she knows he is evil. She replied that she supports Bush because he is protecting the Holy Land. Brenda says, I almost gagged. Needless to say, I no longer communicate with this person. Okay. Here, this is from Alan. Writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hi, Peter. Recently, I recited the whole First Amendment as my announcement on my answering machine. Everyone loved it, but didn't know what it was. Holy crap, he says. We have a real problem in this country, Peter. Al from Payson. P-A-Y-S-O-N. Where in the hell is that, Al? Huh. Didn't I read that last time I was subbing for Mike, what was it, something like only 20% of the people could name the freedoms enunciated in the First Amendment. And they're not all freedoms. I mean, they do talk about, let me see. Yeah, I guess there are five. And they said more people were able to identify the Simpsons than could identify the First Amendment rights. But the first one, I think I did, because I remember making this point. I'll do it real quickly. This is number one. Number one, if you ask people too, I bet you people are pretty savvy, but think about it. And tell me when you come on the air whether you would have known that. What's the first, I got to frame this correctly. What is the first item taken up by the First Amendment? Is it freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, the right of people to peacefully assemble, the right of people to petition the government for redress of grievances? Which is it? It's none of those. It's none of those at all. Number one, I'll read it. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. This sounds familiar in my head, so I can say it again quickly. Because the founding fathers knew, and this speaks to Bush Co. and this hideous intertwining of religion that these characters are trying to bring about. I mean, they're you know, purely fake. I mean, there's obviously real religious nuts in this country that are trying to do that. But the founding fathers, through their experience in Europe and in this country, knew that a government intertwined, commingled with religion was a deadly mix. So that was the first thing that they said when it came to the Bill of Rights. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, because they knew that if there was an official religion, that they knew if the government was not secular as they intended, that everything else stood in jeopardy. All right, let's go back to our phones, 866-303-2270. I guess it's dealer's choice here, so I will do it purely by how long you've been waiting. Here's Mark in San Francisco. Mark, hi, it's Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. You're on the air.
Yes, hello, Peter. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to talk to one of your callers had mentioned McCain, John McCain.
Sure.
And he was, you know, questioning his credentials. And I just wanted to remind your listeners maybe that they could pick up today's New York Times with Paul Krugman, wrote a very good article, and I thought didn't pull too many punches in pointing out that McCain definitely is not a liberal. And just to give a couple highlights of this, mm-hmm. or liberal as far as Republicans can go.
Well, let me just say though, Mark, that McCain just gave this speech urging Republicans
right.
to support Bush.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Krugman really points out that he will go against him to look good here and there, but always comes back to the fold. He also said that he was going to sign the South Dakota bill of totally banning abortions for all practical purposes.
Well, who was going to sign it?
That McCain would actually do that.
Oh, he agreed
in
with
Krugman's article.
Yeah, okay.
And that a little bit of softening was done by a spokesperson of his saying, well, he would have made sure that, you know, for rape and incest, but that's not what the bill says. So
no, it's a compulsory pregnancy bill.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The other thing he points out, which is interesting, is that McCain was actually among many of the neoconservatives before the election of 2000 was their favorite choice, because he spoke very openly about preemptive strikes in various countries and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that it continues on. It's a really good article.
Well, you know, usually I read him. Actually, he is excellent and nails these Bushites to the wall.
He does.
One of the most hideous ideas I've heard is a cross-party McCain-Lieberman ticket.
Yeah, I know. It scares me.
Yeah, because that would be the end of the Republic for sure. All right, thanks a lot, Mark. I appreciate you calling. Steve in St. Louis, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air. Hey, you with me, Steve? No? Okay. We'll go to Jerry in San Antonio. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, you with me?
I am with you. Are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we're there.
I just wanted to, I'm pretty much straight down the middle. If I lean one way, it tends to be more toward the right. Just a touch. But if for no other reason, the way I was raised, I guess. I know how the right feels about this particular subject, but I've never really heard anybody on the established left comment on it. And I just wanted to know what you guys think, you in particular, since you're who I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm.
I personally believe, and I'm not a conspiracy nut, I don't hide behind the blinds in my apartment, I personally believe that the current administration, our government, is responsible and carried out the 9/11 attacks. I don't think Al-Qaeda had anything to do with it. I don't think bin Laden had anything to do with it, other than a fall guy.
Well, there's a lot of evidence out on the Internet for that, and I've seen a lot of those sites, and people continually direct me to it. I guess I would go only this far, and I think it's all one needs to, because this still would be an impeachable offense. I think that it will come out eventually, Jerry, that the Bush administration decided the next time that there was an attack on any U.S. asset anywhere in the world, that they would invade Afghanistan, overthrow the Taliban, who was not going along with the oil pipeline program, and if possible, attack Iraq as well. I don't think in their wildest imagination they ever knew the attack would be this severe or come close to destroying, for instance, either the White House or the Capitol. That's the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania. But even if you think that's lets them off the hook too much, because I hear what you said, still the idea that they did not mobilize the country's defenses, that they were warned very specifically that this had a possibility of occurring, they are guilty of intentionally dropping the security of the United States for political gain.
They certainly dropped the ball, and they had their opportunities.
Well, they did. How did Bush enjoy that popularity? Every time we talk about this, I say the same thing. If Al Gore would have been the president on September 11th, if he would have been seated properly, having we were talking throughout the program about Gore having won the 2000 election.
Uh-huh.
If it would have been President Gore that dropped the ball that badly, the Republicans would have moved to impeach him, and I would not have defended him. Instead,
he would have been crucified.
Yeah, instead, Bush, and we know how he functioned and how he acted, winds up with this immense popularity and support for going to war. It is way beyond me. All right, Jerry, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Dick is in Ohio. Dick, hi. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
I am doing great.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I saw your website. It was great.
Well, thank you. I'll tell people to go. I'm not selling anything, so I have no qualms about urging people to go there. My last name is Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, so it's peterwerbe.com.
Yeah, I just wanted to support my family's from Ohio. and I want to support the port system, the Great Lakes to the Ohio River. I think they do a great job of navigating, and I say we keep on plugging for these people. I'm a big consumer and big fan of the lake freighters and the towboats, and I say we keep these things going because they do a valuable service to our country in Ohio.
What do you mean you're a big consumer?
I'm not consumer, but I'm a big fan of that. Not consumer, but I'm a big fan of Air America Radio.
Oh, I see.
What I mean. I meant I work at I like to call the talk shows and things, but I'm a big fan of Air America.
Oh, that's good.
But I like to call the talk shows and write the media, because let me tell you something. We need help in Ohio, Peter.
You do?
Yes.
You do indeed. You do indeed.
Budget cuts.
And you got a pretty corrupt government there. Hey, thanks a lot, Dick. Let me just ask you real quickly, because you hear the music coming up, so I got to go. You had some wind down there, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Well, have a good day. I'll keep in touch, okay?
Thanks, Dick. Call us again, 866-303-2270, if you've been trying to get on. Got some open lines for you. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. The Air America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor. Now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
All right, we are going up the country. This is Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here with you. A couple of people have written in, Dear Mike at CallTalk, yes, at yahoo.com. Peter Werby, though, in for Mike, and Mike's off tomorrow as well. I'll give you the details in a few minutes, what he's doing over in Madison, Wisconsin. And what else? You know, I was remiss. I probably should have mentioned this earlier, although it happened a couple of days ago. Tom Fox, who was one of the Christian peace team people that was kidnapped in Iraq and was tortured and executed over the last few days. Craig from Boone, North Carolina, wrote in, and I remember Chuck, if you're listening, you may want to give us a call. Chuck has knew Tom Fox and talked with us about some of the vigils that were going on. There's three other people still being held, and I guess people... The Christian people are praying. I don't know what those of us that don't pray do. Just hate Bush all the more for creating the context of this awful conflict that has killed so many people, taken so many people victim. And you know what? The people responsible, the liars, the war makers, they're never going to be brought to justice. Things going as they are. I mean, hopefully things will change. The other thing we never got a call on, I don't know if you've, I listen to Mike a lot. Don't listen to him every single night or all portions of his program. But there was the Air America station in Phoenix, this wildly successful format there. This Christian broadcast group bought the station and kicked the Air America format off, proving that they're not necessarily driven by greed, as we usually think of the right-wingers, but just wacko ideology as well. They because they know once we start talking, people say, wait a minute, that makes some sense. And what the restricted talk, what they are able to put across when we're not able there to answer, doesn't make a bit of sense. All right, let's go to John in Atlanta, Georgia, hometown of Mike Malloy. John, hi. It's Peter Werby on Mike's show. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks.
Oh, Peter, I'd like to add a few perspectives to the conversation tonight. You might agree with, you might not agree with.
Go ahead.
With regard to the great accumulation of wealth in the world and all the suffering that's going on in the world. You know, personally, I think that we all should be, to a great degree, ashamed, and myself included, for basically, almost collectively, ignoring the fact that, you know, 20 to 30,000 children every day in this world starve.
Yeah.
I mean, two...
Starve to death.
Not just that, but, I mean, just look at the rest of the world. I mean, 2 to 3 million people have been slaughtered in Sudan in the last 10, 15 years. I mean, if you look at North Korea, millions have been systematically starved by that monster running that country in the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, all over the world, you look at China, where millions of people are living under a form of slavery. I mean, all over the world, these things, you know, barely catch our attention. I mean, here we are living our lives in basic luxury. Here in America, you know, probably 4 billion people in the world would look at the poor people in America as living like kings in luxury.
Well, I think the problem, John, seems unsurmountable on one hand, and it seems unapproachable. I mean, you have legislators in Tennessee introducing a bill that would abolish dildos. I mean, that's the level at which people engage politics. And the idea that we could deal with these everything from mass starvation to these plagues like AIDS doesn't seem to be within anybody's reach. And it's all there. All the money's there. $2.6 trillion sitting in the hands of under 800 men, where probably 20% of that would end everything that you and I just named.
Well, Peter, you know, I kind of have a little different perspective on it. You know the old saying that sunlight is the greatest disinfectant. You know, if our media and our politicians, our leaders, those who've got the bully pulpit out there, would give attention to this suffering, things would happen. And our leaders and our media, in a general sense, to a great degree, are a reflection of us. So I don't always point the finger at our leaders and the media, But if we got more involved in really addressing the true suffering in the world, and I know politics is something that is very important that we all should be involved in and educated about and actively.
Yeah, but there's no separation here, and ultimately this is a political question. John, thanks for bringing that up. You're absolutely right. I want to get Patty on before we end our show. Patty's calling from Westfield, New Jersey. Hi, Patty. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Peter. It's great to hear you. I don't know that I've come across you before, but
well, here
you've been
I am.
Right on the mark on just about everything.
Well, thank you so. What's up?
I'm just delighted with Senator Feingold. You know, at least one member of the Senate seems to get it that when you have a duty to act and you turn a blind eye, it makes you an accomplice. And what's so frustrating is that other members of the Senate seem to so quickly forget that they're paying an enormous political price for being accomplices in getting us into the war. You know, whether we would have gone to war or not, had they, anyone who would have objected at that time, wouldn't have been complicit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at this point, if...
Well, there was a bunch of senators. I was trying to remember before whether it was 37 or 27 or 37.
Yes, and every single one of them wasn't complicit.
That's
and,
right.
And unfortunately, the party as a whole, you know, is tarnished by those who became complicit, which, you know, have been the people who see themselves as future leaders.
And, Patty, isn't it sad, though, that you and I, or I should say I, like you, are thrilled at Russ Feingold, the fact that someone actually stood up and told some truth and wanted to bring this law-breaking, constitution-shredding politician, and no one responds. But yet one person in this huge body, 100 men and women, it's a sad state of affairs.
Well, I think that we can, you know, we got 25 of them to stand up on Alito in a week's time when it was over. I don't know that we cannot make it clear to them. I mean, they're, you know, in their beltway bubble.
Hey, Patty, we're out of time, and maybe you can hear the music coming up. Thanks for being our last caller on the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby had a great time tonight. Mike will be in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to his website, MikeMalloy.com. Thanks to everybody at Air America, and I'll be on the show all next week. Bye now.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K-9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Searchdog USA.
Who was the first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control? First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags? And who is working on future safety innovations like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.